You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mike Ryan and his dad at the tailgate. Woof.
Which part? Woof. Where do you side? Where do you side on this? Whose side are you taking? Mike Ryan's dad being an asshole or Mike Ryan being an asshole?
Look, we're all familiar with dads being tricky social partners, but I think you got to give a little more preamble. You got to give a little more warning. You got to like explain what you're walking into if he's never been to a Miami tailgate. Sounds to me like the worst hellscape I can imagine.
That's right.
No amount of money you could offer me to attend a University of Miami tailgate. So I think you kind of got to set the scene a little bit before you walk in there.
You would leave there physically charred and not from an exploding car or grill. You would leave there with all sorts of smears and physical marks on you just from life happening too fast and you trying to keep things clean.
I think you'd have a great time at a University of Miami tailgate. I don't understand why you're smearing.
You're incorrect.
Like
I would not. My soul would be charred. Like I would have like a... a metaphorical grill would explode near my soul.
Like the bad place. Yeah, exactly.
You were sitting here saying, Whittingham, that you think he'd enjoy it. And what I'm telling you is his spirit would arrive and immediately be jostled. Like it would just be shaken and there would be liquors and lighter
like a
fluid.
Snow globe.
And then something would catch fire.
In my mind, I see Mike like Indiana Jones at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark with the spirits swirling around him and
just
Karen Allen.
Don't look. Don't look. Close your eyes. Close your eyes and don't look at anything.
Well, it's the spirits that would be swirling around him, but the kind you buy in a liquor store. They wouldn't be, and they would all be drunk as well. Yes, all of them. Let's go ahead and do stat of the day here, and I want to talk to you about your busy Emmy night, because I know the Emmys are hugely important to you, and you live for awards, and it is the lifeblood that all of your principles in life are soaked in. So let's go ahead and do stat of the day.
Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day.
I was going to save this until Stu Gatz got back, but I'll just do it now because he may never come back, right? So.
I thought he was going to be back today, dude, and I thought he was going to be back yesterday.
His sound quality today from his daughter's dorm room, man, he's never coming
back. That's just a surgical strike that he would be here for 2 minutes in the last 2 days and then he would just wreck our relationship with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Major League Baseball, you may have heard, is putting in a pitch clock to try to speed up the game. Because last year, the average game in Major League Baseball took 3 hours and 11 minutes to play. which is roughly as long as either the movie Titanic or Schindler's List. And I looked it up. Sandy Koufax threw a perfect game on September 9th, 1965. We just passed the anniversary. That game took 1 hour and 43 minutes to play.
Oh, my God.
Which is, I looked this up too, 1 minute shorter than the 1989 cinematic masterpiece, Tango and Cash.
Oh. How many millions?
In about 60 years, we've gone from Tango and Cash to Schindler's List in terms of the length of games.
Do you like the rule changes? You must like that they're getting rid of the shift and trying to speed things up.
I like that they're trying, certainly. And I think the pitch clock is going to be great. And I think that the dicier thing is the shift, because I think it's a little unfair. A bunch of infielders have been saying, like, they like to start with their feet on the grass just as a matter of course, and they won't be able to do that anymore. And also, you're going to see teams, like, cheat the shift as much as they can. Like, shortstops will play, like, right behind second and then, like, rush to their left every time a pitch comes in. Like, I don't know how effective that's going to be, but they have to try something. And I applaud Theo Epstein and I applaud the game for actually attempting to get closer to what I think of as the Tango and Cash line that we should be heading toward in order to make the game more exciting. So yes, I'm in favor.
Sandy Koufax, you traipse along the beach and then he waltzes off with my drugs.
I thought, Mike, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I thought the evolution that was going to respond to the evolution was that all these guys were going to figure out how to just slap the ball through the left side, that every last one of them was going to learn that. And then they're like, no, we want all four bases. We don't want just one.
Well, that's the problem. Is there's a couple problems here. One is the metrics say don't hit against the shift, hit over the shift. Like they're still valuing home runs so highly that they're just like, well, if I hit the ball over the fence, it doesn't matter where the infielders play. So that's one problem. The other problem is that you can't just tell a major leaguer to change his swing. It just doesn't work that way. You can't say like, hey, take this. There are certain guys. There's Ichiro's and Tony Gwynn's and DJ LeMahieu's and guys like that hit the ball to all fields. But if you're not that kind of hitter, you can't just become that kind of hitter. It takes years to learn how to become that kind of hitter. And there's too much at stake. And so they've all just said like, okay, if you're going to play these infielders there, I will attempt to just hit the ball over the fence or strike out or walk. And that will be the way I make my money. So I'm like you, when this first started, I thought like, well, that's fine. Just hit the ball the other way. There's an enormous gap on the left side of the field. And occasionally you see guys drop a bunt down or slap the ball the other way. But you can't tell Kyle Schwarber, who's made all of his money and all of his success by hitting the ball as far as he can to right field, to simply slap the ball the other way. It just doesn't, baseball doesn't work that way. So this is the next best thing.
If you love baseball, you will not find two people talking about it who love it more than Mike Schur and Joe Posnanski. You can check out the podcast wherever it is you get your podcasts, and you can do it on baseball, but it's not just baseball. It's a lot more other stuff. You were at the Emmys last night, around the Emmys, celebrating the Emmys. You're late today and not around as part of your free internship much earlier when you're supposed to be, convenient to our schedules, because you've been dabbling in Emmy parties.
Yeah, listen, I'm happy to talk about this, but I have a request, which is maximum 3 Look at Me, Louie sounds can be played during the time I'm talking about this.
Okay, whenever you drop a name, yes. Whenever you drop a name, we will. We
have to be judicious.
We are ready to do it.
All right.
I'm just saying that I don't mind. This is going to result in a couple Look at Me, Louies. I just don't want one every 5 seconds while I'm trying to tell you whatever you want to hear about this. All right, Whittingham's giving me a thumbs up, so I'm going to assume that we're capped at 3.
Yes, we are capped at 3. We will use them whenever we feel like it. Go ahead.
All right. I sat right behind Lizzo last night. That was exciting. Look at me, Louie. Lizzo had on the biggest dress I've ever seen. It was phenomenal. It dominated the entire room. It was the largest piece of clothing that's ever been worn by any human being. And my 12-year-old daughter.
Nice.
And she's a huge Lizzo fan. And so all she cared about was that Lizzo was right in front of her, which was great because that made her night.
Did she take pictures that she wasn't supposed to take to put on social media of like near her, or did she respect?
She has no social media. She's not allowed on social media. Nice. She's 12 years old. But she did excitedly take a picture of Lizzo's dress. it got stuck on my shoe at one point, which was embarrassing for me. But she took a photo of Lizzo's dress and sent it to my wife and was very, very excited. She was also excited to see the Stranger Things kids, but they weren't there, which was sad for her because that's really her. That's the only thing she cares about. She really didn't care about anything I was involved in. She wanted to see Zendaya, Selena Gomez, Lizzo, and the Stranger Things kids. And she went, I think she went 3 for 4 because Zendaya was there and Selena Gomez was there. So all that was great. And then we lost in our category to your buddy there, Bill Lawrence.
Roy laughing right in your
face. Roy's best friend. Best friend, Bill Lawrence.
That's my man. Yes.
And which is, you know what? Let me just say this. I'm so happy for him because it's about time something breaks right for that guy. You know what I mean? It's so nice. It's nice when good things happen to good people who have already had literally thousands of good things happen to them. And I just couldn't be happier. Born rich, tall, and handsome in Southern Connecticut, he's had to overcome literally ones of obstacles in order to achieve his dreams.
Including in a Hollywood bully, apparently, that he told, next time I see you, you're going to be working for me or something like that. Or pumping
well,
my gas.
Okay, so thank you for bringing this up. So I heard him tell that story, a SUI-nominated story, I should add, about how he was a total jerk to some kid growing up who... And he made fun of the kid for being poor and having no future. And then he later saw the kid mowing his lawn. And it was really nice because he was apparently so moved by this moment and had such self-reflection that only 40 years later, he decided to do a show about people being nice to each other. And I think that's really great. It's very inspirational that he had that moment of revelation and then 40 years later did something about
it. There's no need
for him,
there's no need for you to lash out at the award-winning Ted Lasso show and creator just because he beat you last night.
I'm not lashing out. I'm saying I'm inspired by the fact that it only took him 4 decades to feel a certain kind of humanity and fellowship and kinship with the people around him.
And only then did he take it and monetize it for profit in a syrupy pandemic right, yeah. show.
How much of that sweet Ted Lasso money is he kicking back to those kids in his that he grew up with in Ridgefield?
He's paying for everybody's lawn to be cut by the guy that the guy that he bullied.
I know that Mike probably doesn't want to hear this, but I still think that Ted Lasso is underrated. I think that underrated, not as a show. I think that Bill Lawrence, Jason Sudeikis, and the crew of that show should get 1% of Apple TV earnings.
Wow.
Because that streaming service was off the map until that show came out. And now, like, they make a bunch of, like, there's a bunch of cool shit that's on that platform now. But for me, there was that platform had nothing going for it. And now, I genuinely think that when you go to the Apple store, you see their faces next to the Apple TV signs. I don't think they get enough credit for what
it
they've done
be,
to see that
It should be
that
Bill
service.
Lawrence's face inside of yes, the Apple when your iPhone
be.
Turns on.
I agree.
Headline, Chris Whittingham, Bill Lawrence, not compensated enough.
I don't think he is. I don't think he is.
Do you know what the word underrated means? Like,
Perhaps undercompensated would have been a better one.
Emmys. They've won the award for the best comedy twice in a row. All of their actors have also won Emmys for being the best at what they do. Like, how could you be any more highly rated?
And they only have
two
seasons, right?
Yeah,
like in their entire existence, they don't know.
100%.
They don't know the idea of like not winning,
and they only have one more left.
Well,
right?
The better story is, I don't want to betray any confidences here. Boy. Is just
but allow you to betray. Yeah, confidence.
Yeah. Well, and don't point it out as I do it. But the original incarnation, there were plenty of executives who didn't think Ted Lasso in its incarnation was going to be any good. Huh. Did you ever have that happen to you? Mike, sure, these TV executives who are TV executives only existing to keep their jobs and think that they're responsible for anyone else's successes. Have you had anyone just tell you, hey, this blows and been totally wrong about something that you've loved?
They tend not to say things like this blows to your face, at least. But that's always the case. It's the most classic story in Hollywood. Cheers was the lowest rated first episode ever aired on NBC. It was later beaten by Seinfeld, which was lower rated than the Cheers pilot. I mean, and look, it's not entirely their fault, right? Like, nobody knows what's going to work and what's not going to work. And so when people say, oh, everybody hated this show, it's like, well, of course, some people hate every show. Some people think every show is going to stink. And then some of those shows turn out to be monster hits and they're wrong. But it's I don't really blame people for that. How can anybody know? Look, Ted Lasso came along at exactly the right moment, which was June or whatever of the pandemic, when everyone was freaked out and losing their minds and trapped inside and wanting to like find comfort and joy in television. And that show offered a big warm hug. And it was exactly what the country needed at exactly that time. And so it like took off. And that, like that, there's always 1,000 variables and things that go into whether shows are successes or not. I don't get any joy in retroactively looking back at what people said about executives or other writers or anybody had to say about a show. Oh, this show's not going to be good or this show's not going to work. It's a coin flip every time. And if you if you play that game, you will find that every single show that's ever succeeded will have had people will have had its detractors. So that's just the deal. That's the business that we're in. It's not science. It's not physics. You can't accurately judge what's going to work and what isn't going to work.
And how much executive interference did you ever have to wade through?
Well, I got really lucky in a number of ways. In that the first show that I created was Parks and Recreation, which I was creating with Greg Daniels. And at the time was like The Office was in season 4. It was the biggest hit on the network. And they just said to Greg, like, you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Like, they left us alone entirely. We got to cast whoever we wanted, which is why we got people like Aubrey Plaza and Nick Offerman and all of these weirdos who had been, who might otherwise have had a harder time getting past the process. So, and then once that show worked, then you get a certain amount of credibility and you're allowed to kind of move forward without a ton of interference. But, that's the deal is there are exceptions to this rule, but generally speaking, executives aren't trying to sabotage you. They're just weighing in with their opinions one way or the other. Sometimes those opinions don't match yours. I wish sometimes that writers and creators were given a little more trust and leeway, but that's the deal. It's a partnership and you kind of have to listen to what they have to say. And if you're polite and you're cordial, then generally speaking, you can usually work out get things mostly the way that you want them.
I heard Aubrey Plaza is having a little bit of a moment.
That could have been said louder, a little more like you're a broadcaster.
No,
microphone.
It's, you got, man, Dan, Sato, like Sato Voce.
Sometimes I look at you and what I see is just undulating subtlety at every turn. Yes, that's what I see.
You can't be loud all the time.
No,
man.
That's right.
Did you say earlier today that you cried when Brazil lost to Germany
7-0? I wept. I didn't cry. I wept.
So weird.
It's not weird. You don't cry for your favorite team? You've never cried.
It was the funniest thing I've ever
Brazil.
Seen.
I wouldn't have guessed Brazil in soccer. I wouldn't have guessed
I wouldn't have either. Yeah. I didn't know that that Sudan had any kind of partnership with Brazil fans, which is interesting. It's an interesting tidbit.
It goes deeper. Like I went to school in Sudan, middle school, and like in social studies, we learned about Brazil and like their steel industry and their shipping industry. And all this is because like Brazil, look, the developing nation that made it and like, that's who we were looking up to as kind of like the kindred spirit of former colonies making good after.
I did not know any of that.
It's deep.
See, I take it back. Now I'm on board.
Now I'm weeping right now about that loss all these years later. Can you tell me, Mike, any more things from the Emmys that, because I've only gotten one Look at Me, Louie,
yeah,
and I'm really disappointed.
Got two more.
Let's see. I introduced my daughter to Seth Meyers and Amy Poehler. That was a fun moment for me as two close friends of mine.
Nope, doesn't qualify. No. You don't get it.
Wow.
No, you don't get it.
I thought that would have done it.
Yeah, introducing my daughter.
I mean,
part,
you work with them.
Yeah, also
that's
makes...
true. I do. Seth was the best man at my wedding.
There you go.
Oh, that's a good one there. Yes.
Yeah, that's good. We're back on track. All right.
Yeah. You deserve that one. But it really doesn't have anything to do with the Emmys. it's just a stray ancillary.
Mike, I got a question, an Emmy question. When you're up for an award, have you ever had, I'm not saying has it happened, but have you ever had that momentary impulse of, they said our name, oh, wait a second, they didn't say our name. Like where you almost start to get up and then you sit back down.
Okay, so let me explain exactly what happens at every award ceremony where an envelope is ripped open, okay? Because some of them, there's no envelope. Some of them, it's just like, you know that you've won or you're mm-hmm. being honored or whatever, okay? So here's what happens. You get nominated for an award and you're very happy and you have this thought process, which is, I'm not going to win, right? We're not going to win. So I'm not going to write a speech. Then within 24 hours before the ceremony, you think, you know what? I don't want to be the guy who gets up there and goes like, oh, I didn't think I was going to win. I wasn't prepared. I don't know what I'm going to say. So you think, okay, I'm going to figure out what I will say, right? So you run through, okay, here are the people I have to thank if I win. This person. Okay, and maybe you write a little joke and you kind of like, okay, I kind of know what I'm going to say. But it doesn't matter because I'm not going to win. You get to the thing. You sit down and you're like, everyone's like, good luck. And you're like, thanks, I'm not going to win, but thank you. Then, at some point, someone comes over and says, hey, don't go to the bathroom because your award is in the next block or whatever. So make sure you're in your seat. And you think, okay. And then your heart starts pounding a little bit. Man. You feel your heart pounding because you're like, holy shit, I might win. Like, it's possible that I win. Like, and okay, wait, if I win, what am I going to say? Oh God, what did I say? What did I think? Okay, here are the people. Right. Well, oh God, I almost forgot that person. Okay. And what's the joke I'm going to do? Okay, good. Okay. And then you're like, I'm not going to win. But I might win. That's the thing, is I might win. It's possible. There's only five people in the category or whatever. Like, it's a 20% chance. I could win. And then they go, and then Bill Lawrence wins. everybody says, like, your name comes up in the five thing, and you're like, oh my God, I think, and at some point, here's the real problem. At some point, you think, I'm going to win.
Son of a bitch.
That's how I've been thinking that I wasn't going to win the whole time, but I think that right now, the end of this storybook evening is that I actually win. And your heart is pounding and you start sweating and you think, this is it. I'm going to win. And then they open the envelope and they say, and the winner is Bill Lawrence for Ted Lasso. And then rapid fire, you're like, I'm such an idiot. I knew I wasn't going to win. Why did I let myself believe I was going to win? This whole thing is so stupid. Giving awards for art is nonsense. Why do we do this to ourselves? I'm never coming back here. If I get nominated next year, I'm never coming back.
These people don't deserve me.
Like, you just go through. And it's like, if you could just get back, if you could maintain the original and correct thought for the whole night, you'd be fine. But like, the world, the universe that they've created doesn't let you maintain that thought. You at some point, against your will, cross over into believing that you have a chance, and that's where they get you. It really sucks, and I go through it all the time.
That's
now
wonderful.
There's one exception to this, which is, you know, as you saw last night, you know, Ted Lasso wins a bunch of awards and Abbott Elementary wins a bunch of awards. So, you know, going into the final thing, best comedy show, it's one of those two shows. Those are the only two possibilities, right? So when the last year, The Good Place, we were nominated for best show, and a bunch of other people got nominations. Will Harper got nominated for playing Chidi, and I think we got nominated for writing, and I can't remember. It doesn't matter. The point is, at the end of the evening, I don't even remember what the two shows were, but there was one other show that had won every award. So you knew that show was going to win best comedy series. And so we were sitting in our little section and all those other shows, and they announced the nominees for best comedy series, and all of the cameras, there's like five cameras, you know, they go and they shoot the losers to get their reactions. But all of the cameras were like 100 feet away, trained only on the table of the people who had won all the other awards. And so it was pretty clear that we weren't winning. So when in a case like that, you're like, okay, I know I'm not going to win, because literally I'm not on camera.
They don't care.
They wouldn't do this if there was any chance that I would win. So unless you're in a situation where you're so obviously the loser that the cameras don't even aim themselves at you to record what is about to happen, you go through that crazy process and then it ends. You end up being way worse than you were before the evening.
As the only other Emmy nominated person on this show, I know totally what you mean. Look at me,
Mike, good talking to you. I don't know if you want to stay here for this, but there is breaking news here. Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns, Amin worked for the Suns, is gonged for a year. He's gone. It's a $10 million fine. A report that is still flimsy. Amin is consuming it now. It is not yet in its most thorough form. He'll have more analysis for you on this tomorrow when he gets to read all of the information. But your initial thoughts here now, that a guy that you've been talking about for a long time, pretty polluted, pretty awful owner of the Suns, is getting to keep his team, but is getting a penalty that still is a pretty stiff one as far as...
Wait, I'm sorry. It's $10 million is the fine, right? That's, I mean, I know he's suspended for a year, but it's a $10 million fine for a guy who owns a team that's worth $2 billion.
The money doesn't matter, but it does to him. Okay.
Robert's the kind of guy that $10 million stings. I'm not saying he can't afford it. I'm saying it stings
but
when he has to.
Owners are not often sent away for a year. The crimes have to be. Silver ultimately does work for the owners. He was able to get rid of Silver because all the owners wanted to get rid of Silver.
Of Sterling, right.
Excuse me. So you make what of this, what you've seen so far today?
So $10 million, that's the maximum allowable by the bylaws and constitutions of the NBA. So it's not like Adam Silver said, $10 million sounds about right. That's the maximum they could fine him. The reality is, when all of this happened, and I read the story, because remember, we heard rumors of the story, and the Suns came out on the defensive court. The story even came out, and then like a month later, story came out. And I read it, and I said, I know a lot of these stories. Some of them I'm learning for the first time, but almost all of them are hearsay. Not saying that they didn't happen. I'm just saying if you are trying to find a legal footing,
you got to prove them
to shit can Robert Sarver. It can't be because so and so said this happened, or so and so said it happened to them. You have to have some sort of smoking gun, whether it's emails like what we saw with the Atlanta Hawks, or an audio recording like what we saw with Donald Sterling. Without those smoking guns, the league is going to have its hands tied, but both from a legal exposure standpoint, they don't want to open themselves up to, you know, lawsuit or whatever. And also, remember who the league is. It's 29 other guys. Like, I hope they don't go through my trash and come up with something that gets me up out of here. So bearing all that in mind, and I know it's an independent investigation by a law firm, but at the end of the day, without physical evidence, audio recordings, paper trails, it's very hard to get anything long-lasting. What was clear is that there was a huge, huge toxic atmosphere in the workplace, and that's why they were able to do what they did, which is suspend him for a year and fine him the maximum allowable.
What are going to be the headlines? Before we get into this more tomorrow, the headlines that he is being punished for blank and blank and blank, because I have not been able to get through the details. What have you seen so far in your cursory viewing of some of the details that you think is most damning, or should we just save it all till tomorrow because you don't want to start talking about this before you've got a more thorough reading of it?
I'll tell everybody all the most crucial details after the break. That's right, tomorrow on the Dan Le Batard Show, Amin breaks down the entire investigation.
Can I ask a question that I'm genuinely curious about?
Certainly.
When an owner gets suspended for a year, practically speaking, what does that mean? Is he just at home phoning in whatever he wants to do with the franchise, or can he literally have no contact with anybody within the organization?
No contact within the organization, not allowed to be involved at all in the business operation of the organization for a year, cannot set foot in any facility, not only the Suns and Mercury facilities, but also NBA. He can't go to the NBA office in New York. He has to be excommunicado.
He's banned, a pariah. He is for a year, he is a total pariah.
But aren't there like decisions that require like an owner's financial approval? So what happens?
The alternate governor has to make those decisions.
Mm. Mike, good talking to you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, sir.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.
Was it Fleabag? Oh.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.